way I'm wearing the most con.
Hey, good afternoon, you beautiful sickos. Dieter and Jake. Week 6. We're talking about the 49ers and the Buccaneers. Let me just get a little drink here, Jake.
Is that wine?
No, this is pickle juice. Have you heard of it?
Never heard of it in my life. Never heard of it in my life. Not once. Yeah. 49ers Bucks. It should be two chaos agents just running through each other's face. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just going to be through the air.
It's not even fermented. This is, you can see you got some nasty bits in the bottom.
I didn't.
It's good. I like pickle juice. I texted you
bad.
Right before.
It's not bad. Yeah, it makes you. It's just salt water.
I'm a fan. You never know. You're going to cramp up in the stream. That calf starts going.
That happens to me about once every 3 months, and we've talked about this, where my girlfriend's sound asleep, and I just go, I'm like screaming, Jake, in pain.
We talked about this in the last stream. You got to take your magnesium, buddy.
Every night
I take a Propel and some magnesium, and I haven't cramped up in months.
I can't drink Propel anymore. Anyway.
Oh, wow. What happened there?
Well, just the thought of drinking a kiwi strawberry Propel that I used to drink in elementary school.
Yeah.
It's just a haunting taste.
Wow. Interesting. The things that the human body rejects.
Before we get into it, Gabe asked a good question, or Gabriel. Yeah. Does that mean that Dieter's playing left guard on Sunday? No, but he's playing right tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I am Charlie Heck. I've been living a double life.
You're a 49er.
My wife has no idea, but I moonlight in Tampa. It's a very long flight, but we make it happen. You were saying that these are two chaos agent teams. Before we came on the stream, I texted you, I think the Bucs are the best worst team. And so I asked you, Jake Hutchinson, are the 49ers the worst good team or also the best worst team?
That's a fantastic sort of almost theological question.
That's what we do. That's why we have a million minutes of stream last month. The theological questions.
They the best, worst team.
We got to drink some Coke Zero, by the way. That's killing me.
Yeah. I would actually say yes. The Bucks are the best, worst team. The Niners are the worst, best team.
I think
that's accurate because the Niners, like, top heaviness and coaching qualities, like, they're actually a good team, but not really. So, yeah. Right.
Okay, good. That's all we need. That's the end of the preview. Enjoy the game, everybody. No, let's talk about what we can make of these teams, because I don't think that there's going to be any consensus. I don't think that there's going to be any true understanding of either of these teams. I don't think these teams understand themselves, much less us. Let's start with this for the 49ers. They have a literal third of their 53-man roster on the injury report right now.
That's correct.
I have it listed out here. You can maybe see that. Maybe not. Doesn't matter. It is going to be completely moot by the time Thursday practice happens. But that doesn't include, by the way, like the 9 guys on IR. Doesn't include Burford, Bosa, Ayuk, Barch, Kittle, Cowing, Jacob Robinson, Curtis Rourke, and Patrick Taylor, amongst others. 18 of the 53 on the Wednesday practice injury report. And obviously some of them practiced and some of them were resting players, but my expectation for this one, Jake, is that you're not getting Yetur Gross-Matos, you're not getting Juwan Jennings, you're not getting Ricky Pearsall, you're not getting Brock Purdy, and if Jordan Watkins was a real person, you wouldn't be getting him either.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So kind of the same thing we saw against the Rams, except maybe even worse. And
yeah,
they won that game.
Yeah, I could see like Juwan playing, right? But I don't know if that'll make
Did you see him the last time he played? Why was he out there?
No,
he can get workers' comp.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's funny because there's going to become a point, and I wonder what it is, where I think everyone's just going to come back at the same time. Malik Mustafa will be interesting. Yeah, someone, Justin, mentioned that. I kind of don't think he'll play, but I also don't know.
Listen, we'll wouldn't go off of one video clip, which is cool. It was a cool clip that everyone put out there of Malik Mustafa jumping real high on like an interception drill. Oh, it was cool. Like they were doing interception drill. And so you just kind of, they're playing 500 in effect. I don't know. Did you guys call it 500 in New Jersey? We called it 500 in Chicago.
500.
throw the ball up in the air and then you yell out the amount of points and whoever catches it gets
Of course, of course. Yeah.
What did you
call
that?
Big in day camp where I was at. I was a stone cold star.
Star at 500. Yeah. Then there's roof ball. That's a whole other thing. Listen, if you want to go off of practice video clips, you're entitled to. That is your right. Let it be known. That is not a good way to go about your
Let business. Me also just say, like, any clip of Malik Mustafa, you're going to be like, he's ready to go.
Yeah.
Right?
That's exactly right.
You know? Like, it's you're never going to feel bad, right? Like, he's always going to look like he's 100%. So,
yeah, he's operating on a different scale than everybody else. So, in this game, we're talking a lot of Kendrick Bourne, who, by the way, is on the injury report.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
It's 18. 16,
17, 18.
Yeah. It's 18 of 53. 18. That's exactly 33%, Jake. In fact, it's 34% if you're rounding
That's
up.
That's sick. That's honestly awesome.
It's incredible. Like,
I don't know how it's possible.
I wish there was a way to track
NFL records for, like, how many players have been listed on injury report. Because that, like, that's got to be close to the record.
I mean, let's also be clear about this. Like, Brock is out with a toe injury, right? He's not going to play. No one really expected him to play. Mac Jones has two injuries, but is a limited participant. He has the knee and the oblique. And next week, he'll have another one. So it's going to be quite something. Tampa Bay kind of banged up themselves for what it's worth. I didn't do a full count, but I think they're down to their fourth and their fifth string corners. And I do think that will...
Zion McCollum had a thumb surgery, I think, yesterday.
Yeah,
Benjamin Morrison, the Notre Dame corner, who we had mixed feelings on, but he has a hamstring injury, didn't practice. Yeah. And Jamel Dean had a hip thing, was limited. And so all right, Jacob Pierre, save us.
Yeah, Jacob Parrish, who has been very good, and we'll talk about him in just a little bit. But for the Niners, we're looking at more Kendrick Bourne. If you're looking to stream a tight end in fantasy, we've been advising this for a minute now. This is the week to do it. Jake Tonjes, everybody, fantasy relevant. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is going to get snaps. That's it. Right. Who's even Malik Turner? Fourth quarter clutch performer.
It's Malik Turner and Kendrick Bourne and everyone else aside from McCaffrey is irrelevant.
Christian McCaffrey currently on pace for 1,300 receiving yards this year,
and he's still in zero rushing touchdowns.
He is. Let me just throw this to you. Wait.
Which, by the way, one of those. By the way, kind of his fault last week that he didn't get one.
100%. Here are the wide receivers that Christian McCaffrey has more yards than this season: Jamar Chase, Garrett Wilson, Cortland Sutton, Nico Collins, Deebo Samuel, and Davante Adams.
Do you feel any better about our disagreement that I think? You don't think McCaffrey could have been a receiver. I think he could have been a possession slot receiver.
I can't hold as firm on it. They are not getting him the ball in that position. He'll line up there every now and again.
Right. I mean, he's not getting pressed, so it's like a question of, like, could he hold up? But I just do think he could be like an elite slot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but in terms of, like, people being like, he's an elite wide receiver, it's like, no, he's not.
No.
He doesn't have the long speed for it.
Let me give you some contextual context here. And the long speed, actually, I think is something that we will be talking about next week. If it doesn't, I'm going to give it one more week because let me be very clear.
A washed take?
I'm not saying it because I do think there's a lot of other things going on. But this is the week that I need to see it or we're bringing this up. And I'll just lay the groundwork right now. Last year, it was obvious that McCaffrey didn't have the same ability to get into fifth gear as he did earlier in his career. And that was somewhat logical coming off of bilateral Achilles tendonitis, which you don't want one of them, much less bilateral. So he didn't get 20 miles per hour on any run recorded or reception recorded, any of his runs, the entirety of last year. To this point, he still does not have a 20-yard run. Thomas Morstead does, but he doesn't. So that's a little bit concerning to me. Obviously, it is a byproduct of him just running into the back of the line because he doesn't trust any of his sequencing up front. And if he doesn't just run into their ass on every play, he knows he's getting tackled for a loss. Like, I get that. But there has to be a couple open field situations this year with the ball in his hands where he can get to 20 miles per hour.
they would be, and this is not a take to say anyone would be better in this offense than McCaffrey, but like Alvin Kamara would be a much better fit for the way their run game is right now in terms of like the level of physicality and the sort of patience to like find little gaps and dive forward a little bit more. Whereas McCaffrey, I think, is just not trusting as much. And again, I don't really think this is his fault, but you look at the touchdown last week and Kyle Juszczyk was sniffing and taking forever to get through the hole. But if McCaffrey waits a quarter of a second and even just pushes juice, he's got one guy to like bounce off of to get a touchdown. And instead they settle for a 20-yard field goal. Right. Like there's an impatience and a lack of tempo to his runs that just feels like he's a little too antsy and not trusting what he's seen, which is like the same thing with Brock, who, by the way, I think I just checked and has like the second highest pressure rate in the league against him. It's like 48% of the time he gets pressure.
Some of that's his fault, to be fair.
Oh, but, yeah, of course. Justin Fields is number one, so it's not a good company to be in.
We've always made that comparison, Fields and Brock. Yeah, I can't blame Christian McCaffrey for not trusting what's in front of him. There isn't. And no one seems to be able to. I don't know if there's been a run play snap this year where everyone has just done their job. If it's happened, it happened for Brian Robinson, like legitimately. Because when you watch McCaffrey, you're like, Jesus Christ, Farrell missed a block, or Tonjes missed a block, or any of the offensive linemen missed a block, or Juszczyk is out here just pretending like he's doing something. They called it fake hustle. That's what the Warriors used to call one of their assistant coaches who was constantly out in public doing work. And you're like, yeah, that's fake hustle. We don't do fake hustle here. He got the axe and hasn't been able to come back. A little bit of fake hustle from Juszczyk right now. Like just a little bit of fake hustle. Like I'm out here blocking. It's like, then throw your body into
somebody. He's got to get through the hole on that play so much quicker. It's literally like such an easy touchdown. I mean, it's not easy. You got to take a shot. No, but like, help him out, man.
I'll say this. I've seen Christian McCaffrey be an incredibly patient, smart, timed back. I don't think he lost that. I don't think he lost that. But he could have lost it. I don't think that's what happened. I'm saying it's a possibility, and that paired with the problems up front is a pretty dangerous combo.
I think there's something to be said for missing almost an entire year, having a desire to be back and healthy and lead, and just knowing that you need to do something special to spring a big play, and also the need to like get through and get a few yards and get down and protect your body if it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So I just think there's like a level of him being conflicted, and when the run game hasn't felt right in a while and you haven't really experienced like, oh, this is what the timing and rhythm is supposed to be. And you're like, all right, I know this guy's supposed to be here, but he's not there.
Right.
I think when things don't click and there's not that sort of plinko, this opens up this type of feel, it wears on your mental trust and your ability to say, all right, this is what this is supposed to look like. And this is what I'm supposed to do here, because supposed to stops meaning anything.
Feels like it's a compounding issue as well. And it's not to say that anything has gotten better, and arguably it's gotten worse up front, but it does feel like the less you trust it, the more you see it break down in front of you, the less inclined you are to give it the patience that it might need in order to get that big.
The less I know, the better.
Hey, you said it, not I. I'll tell you this. Now you know this. Christian McCaffrey is 21st in the NFL in rushing yards. He is second in attempts. That doesn't seem good. It's a good thing he can catch the football, and he will be doing that an awful lot in this game without question, against a team that runs, again, the mint tight front a lot and a 3-4. Vita Vea and nose guard or one technique, as good as it gets. But a defense that's banged up and kind of trying to figure out what the hell it needs to do with some of these injuries.
The defense that
shows up on the statistical profile is not the defense that we saw against the Seahawks last week.
I would like to see some pin pull in this game with Colby in space. Like that's one thing where like him moving and Trent moving, I'd like to see some of that. Some of like, hey, it's going to be congested in the box. Let's get some motion going this way.
Yeah.
Fake. Pull it back the other way.
A little bit of jailbreak. little bit of jailbreak in the cards here. Listen, it's a beautiful thing when you're able to get tape against an offense that's so very similar in the most recent iteation. I didn't watch anything but the Seattle tape from this Tampa
team. I didn't either.
And I just watched the first half because the second half was a carnival game. Everyone got injured. No one knew what happened. It got weird in Seattle. When have we said that before? I'll tell you what I like from this Tampa Bay team. I like Rashad White. I think he's a totally different back than the guy that I've seen the last couple of years. He's no Bucky Irving.
Okay, but, real quick.
Yeah.
PFF's wrong. PFF's wrong.
And that's why you subscribe to the Hutch Report.
PFF has fallen off a cliff this year. And respected people that do their jobs, but like they're wrong. They're objectively wrong.
Do you have to respect? I don't know. We should respect all people everywhere. I think that's a decent policy on the baseline. But should we respect some guy in India who's doing these grades now?
That they are the sixth best run blocking team in the league this year is it's not just like farcical. It's like objectively wrong. It's not even close to the truth.
They average 3.1 yards per carry. How can they be good at this? Like, what are we talking about? We will get to Vice. This is good stuff. We'll get to you in just a second. Appreciate the super. Okay, here's what I liked about Tampa. I think Rashad White is a totally different back than he's been in recent years. I do think, as you noted in a text combo, some of that is how they block for him and the kind of offense that they're calling for him. But he was a god-awful running back. A lot of the things that we were describing with McCaffrey, like impatient, couldn't see it, just running into his guard's
especially
ass.
Especially early on in his career,
Had no idea what he was doing. He is starting to get the feel for it now. And they're letting him run inside. And as you noted, you know, they still have that pass game stuff. I'm a little hesitant to go all in on Rashad White because I do think there's an aesthetic aspect to White that maybe he just looks different. There's not a lot of tall, like 6'2" skinny running backs. And it's kind of just cool to watch because he's a smooth glider. So maybe I'm
not
falling
a little backs to him in the league.
No, maybe I'm just falling a little bit prey to the peculiarity of it all. Yeah. But he does look different. I've watched a lot of Rashad White. He was a fantasy football cheat code for a long time because he was just getting dump offs left and right. And so I watched a lot of his games. And this is a totally different back. And I'm a fan, and I do think that he's going to cause some problems for the Niners in this game. What else? Do you want to talk about Ibuka? You just want to talk about Ibuka right now?
Well, I was going to say with White, I just feel like they're running like a power run game. Not always, but like there's a level of physicality that they're providing up front. And when they want to break it outside of the tackles, they're doing a lot of like gadget speed motion type handoffs to wide receivers that isn't working quite well, which feels like they're trying to replace Bucky, who's not going to play this week. It seems like a bad ankle injury, which is not great for me. I like the physicality that they're bringing at the point of attack. And Ibuka, so it's like the Luke Kuechly thing. It's like, what is this team's identity? They want to get the ball to White on like short little screens and, just throw it to him
quick. Dump outs, swing routes.
They look for Kate Otten, and then they're trying to funnel it to Ibuka, where Baker will throw it into god-awful tight windows. I believe 20% of his throws are tight windows, which is the third highest rate in the league. He's gonna throw it to Ibuka in tight windows pretty consistently. And I think there's something to be said for I feel like sometimes when the 49ers run a defense, it's like, well, this is my responsibility. Mm. It's like, well, the logical thing to do is you cover him, but remember who Ibuka is. Like whenever there's like do I take him or him? Do I lean
just
a little bit
him.
One way? They should not bracket Ibuka the whole game, but like put a lot of attention on him. I think it's a good Jair Brown opportunity against Otten. I think that
could
be a decent opportunity for him.
Okay.
But I do think putting everything on Ibuka and saying like make somebody else beat you, and they will, right? Like they've still got some scatty type guys that are going to beat them.
Like Sterling Shepard's good. Is it Trey Palmer? Trey Martin? Which one? It's a Trey of some
Trey
sort.
Palmer.
Trey Palmer. Thank you. He's a squirrely little shit. He's tough to get down. I mean, he weighs nothing. You could probably
And they've got Tez Johnson, who they're not using much of. He's speedy as hell.
He's good. I'll say this: they love to run that flood concept on the right side. and they run that clear out route down the seam, which is typically Sterling Shepard. And then Ibuka comes in and just tucks in on that 15 to 20 yard out.
Yep.
And there's that window, you know, you talk about that tight window. Baker's got it there. The thing that stood out to me watching the Bucs offense beyond those things, which I think are just obvious, like it's Otten over the middle, it's Ibuka on the deep shot, it's White anything otherwise. And then every now and again, if you force them to, they will give it to another receiver, is that there is so much eye candy. And it's not eye candy in the sense of motion and orbits and all this stuff. It's eye candy in Baker's just a whirling dervish back there.
Yeah.
They always have some ulterior motive. So I think you noted, Jake, they barely run any play action.
It's 18.2%, second lowest in the league.
That is a flawed statistic because they run more fake pitches, fake boots, fake everything. Every play has a fake in it.
He's moving his feet a lot, and not like necessarily when he's thrown, but like he's always doing just something.
Dancing. He's got something going on. I have never seen, I talked to Fred Warner about this for a little bit yesterday. I've never seen a quarterback who is not a primary scrambler. So this excludes Lamar Jackson.
Right.
And that is unfair to Lamar Jackson, but just Lamar Jackson's in a different category. I've never seen a quarterback who is, in theory, a pocket passer who's got some scoot throw shoulder shakes in the backfield before he throws. He will be standing back there. The pocket is collapsing, and that happens a lot. And he will be like, hold on, let me shimmy.
Kind of like a mini Big Ben.
It was, yeah, it's so hard because I haven't seen, I can't remember prime Big Ben. And obviously he didn't have this kind of wiggle.
Right.
That's what Baker's doing. He's got to get his wiggles out. That's what we talk about with the three-year-old. You got to get your wiggles out. Just go and wiggle. Just, you know, shake it all out.
That's what my dog does every time he wakes up in the morning.
There it is. So it is wild to watch, and it's going to be tricky for Fred and for D. Winters, who are going to have a lot of responsibility in this game, to figure out what it is that dude is doing on this play, because he is a one-read quarterback. To be fair, he's a one-read quarterback, and his second read, this is the Tom Moore school, and he is an assistant coach on this team, Tom Moore. 1-2-3, throw the motherfucker away is like the mantra of Tom Moore, all-time great offensive coordinator, Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator for a long time in Indianapolis. He's a one-read guy. He's not scanning the field. He's scanning the defense to see if he should run it or if he can get the ball to his first dude, and he'll run it, and he's a good runner, and he does not care about his body.
Yeah, I like
he's,
this.
He's
comp.
He's a tough SOB to figure out, man. There's no.
I like this comp from like V Blank Prime Jeff Garcia. I think that's a pretty. I don't think it's 1-to-1, but it's a pretty. I think it's a decent comp.
Yeah, it's like, I guess this is what Jeff Garcia would have had to do,
right?
In this era of ultra athletic,
ultra dynamic defenses. He's just hard to get down, man.
I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback with a better feel.
It's funny, like
he's
how
in a flow state.
Yeah, and he just like doesn't care. Like he feels comfortable. He's like, all right, like he's back to like college where he's just like doing shit and slinging it.
Yeah,
and he's buying enough time. He's only scrambling when there's like enough there. He's also not taking a ton of like huge shots. Like he gets down, he gets around. He's just crafty.
A step ahead.
Kind of a huge pain to like deal with.
Yeah, and there is absolutely a world where he just goes thermonuclear because the Niners are just like, can't get a read on him. Like, he's squirrely. There's a lot of squirrely dudes on this team. Let's flip it. Let's talk about.
I'll start with a vice because this is one of the thoughts I had. Says you're a Bucs and Niners guy. Bucs have an awful linebacker core and they could be exposed in coverage. It's funny because like, Lavonte David's timeless. Right. Like he's been doing this quite literally for 15 years, but he's stiff. And I'm less of a fan of Servacier Dennis, who
he doesn't
looks
know what he's doing.
Even stiffer, I would argue. And as always, you look, I think, first thing at the linebacker core.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan, if you've got a weak linebacker core in coverage, he's going to get you. I forgot what I was going to say.
He's going to break you. I mean, this is the classic Shanahan offense, right? Like the classic Shanahan offense, and this is what we did for seven straight years. before Brock showed up was, okay, how do we put these linebackers into conflict and create a lot of space either in front of them for the run game or behind them for the pass game?
Yes.
And it's layered throws and stuff over the middle. And these guys being like, every linebacker has two jobs, right? Because they both have to stop the run and get out to the flats or cover the hook for a pass. So every linebacker has two jobs. Kyle Shanahan's like, what if we made it three? What if we made it four? And what if we left them standing there wondering which of the four jobs they should be doing right now? Cause all of them look the exact same to them as they line up.
Like, this feels like a, like it, and I don't have a gut feel necessarily on either team because both teams are so
barely
go either way. And every single game they've played has been total chaos.
Best worst team versus the worst best team.
I think this could easily be, I could see it being like a low scoring game in the first half where it's like uncomfortable. No one gets going. Yeah. And then the second half explodes.
That's exactly what happened in the Seattle game. That game was 6-0 until the 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
6-0, two field goals.
Where the Niners can't get the run game going, the Bucs are like trying to find their offense, and but then there's like some random chunk plays at the end of the quarter and things that open up in the second.
Yeah, it's they're just tricky teams to figure out. I do think that going across country on the road, even with a mini bye, is tough. But then you know, the flip side of it is that you know I know that they've had time to adjust now, but like Tampa just traveled all the way from Seattle. Right. They had to do a long cross country flight. So they're kind of behind it as they start week prep.
I guess it's a question of like if you're going to buy business class on one way, which way would you rather have it? Going out there so you feel good on the way in or going home so you feel well rested when you get home? Sort of a theoretical.
That's a six half dozen scenario.
Trying to figure that out for a trip. So the more of an actual pragmatic question.
Listen to this guy using business class. I just bought premium economy and I thought I was splurging. And I was, because it's expensive no matter what. I wrote down their linebackers like a million times here. Let's talk about their nickelback. We talked a lot about Jacob Parrish during the draft process. We were both infatuated, too strong a term. But the conversations kept coming back to Jacob Parrish. He has been awesome for them. Awesome. He's an edge setter. He's been really solid in coverage. Seattle wasn't his best game. I've watched enough of him because we talked about him so much. I keep tabs on kind of our guys that even that game, which was good enough, wasn't even close. That was probably his worst game of the year. Yeah. It was still a lot of flash. He's a really tough player. And he's going to, the thing with him is in a 3-4 front and in a nickel base, which is what they run, he is asked to set the edge a lot and he does it very well. If the Niners can win that matchup, it's hard for me to imagine a circumstance in which they lose this game. If Jacob Parrish has the kind of games that he's had so far this season, though, and he is able to set that edge and he is a pain in the ass in coverage, and just kind of wins rep after rep, then the Niners are really behind it.
I really do think Matt could throw for another like 350 in this game, which is crazy because he's injured and has no one to throw to, and yet like I feel good about that happening, partially because like they just can't run the ball and it feels like it's going to be like what are you going to do against Vita Vea? Like I know they lost Kalijah Kancey, which hurts them.
Logan Hall, who they line up. I really like Logan Hall.
I like him too.
And they'll throw in some Greg Gaines, I believe, there every now and again. He's fine. He's kind of a jag these days. But Hall, again, one of these things where who is that defensive tackle that plays next to on the Chiefs? Sorry, I don't even want to pretend the name. He has that same kind of lanky, sub 300 punch, kind of Mykel Williams would be a fair comp in there. I really like him. That interior is going to wreck the Niners. Like Vita Vea has to be double teamed every play. No exceptions. Because you will find out when he didn't get double teamed by him being in the backfield.
They're going to line him up in some weird spots too. They haven't done, I think, as much of that this year, but I think they will. I think they're going to want to get a one-on-one against those guards. And there is nothing the 49ers offensive line has been worse at than like handling a stunt where like a big guy runs at a guard and then someone else loops around. They're allowing a pressure almost 100% of the time against those. And imagine Vita Vea being the guy that collapses that.
The thing when Vita Vea comes through the line is that there's like two guys behind him every time. He is a...
They should just run like a flying V behind him.
I mean, they kind of do. Yeah. He is a battering ram of a human, and there's like four dudes in the SWAT team coming in behind the battering ram guys. He's the juggernaut. He's the Kool-Aid man. He just busts down walls and lets everything else come in behind him. He's as good of a player as there is in the NFL. And the last guy on the planet that the 49ers want to see right now. Just the last one. At least Chris Jones will take plays off. This dude's out there every time.
The Bucs blitz quite a bit.
They did.
I think I didn't see a lot against Seattle, but like in general, the stats say they blitz quite a bit. And I kind of think that plays in the Niners' hands in some ways to just like, you know, it's like that first Brock game where the Dolphins just were running cover zero every play. It's like, if you're going to speed them up, like, great. They're going to take the 2 yard pass every single play and just dink and dunk to Tondres and Kendrick Bourne all day. So,
right. Yeah, there's Kyle Shanahan, Mac Jones offense has no problem whatsoever with the 14 play drive because they do move it enough. Like, it's the opposite of what we saw from the Cardinals a couple weeks ago, where they had a 13-play drive that was 32 yards. And it's like, that's not an offense. That's a waste of our time. That's a clock adjuster more than anything else. The 49ers will go 90 yards in 13 plays, and they're totally fine. I mean, Kyle has enough trust in Mac that he'll make the smart decision on the first and second read consistently that they want. That's their ideal. 14, 15 play drives, 10, whatever. Double digit number play drives where there's no risk, consistent reward, stuff keeps moving, short third downs.
Right.
You can go for it on fourth. Kyle's way more keen to go for it on fourth this year. He's done it a lot with an injured quarterback. He'll scramble his ass right up the middle. It is going to be something to behold. You know, Vyas is right. Like, Todd Bowles typically has a highest blitz rate. I think that he knows, though, that secondary can't handle a high blitz rate. Now, again, it's a base 3-4, so blitz rate is always going to be a little bit skewed.
Right.
Because that's a linebacker, even though you're lining him up at defensive end. He's a stand-up linebacker, so now he's blitzing as opposed to just doing what a defensive end in a 4-3 would do. At the same time, yes, they do. They want to come. They stunt as well as any team in football, as you
mentioned. They technically have the number one pressure rate. I didn't see that as much on Sunday. 45%, which is strange. Again, it doesn't...
I mean, Darnold was running for his life a little bit, to be fair.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything that Mac can't do, theoretically. I don't know how much more injured he is today than he was yesterday. Every day, a new challenge with them. Let's just 32 minutes in, we'll get to a bunch of questions.
Sure.
It's probably going to be a shorter stream because it's just hard to get a read on either of these teams with all the injuries.
Yeah, agreed. It's a little bit like the Jags game. I'm going to say Niners 30, Bucks 28.
Yeah. I'm going Bucks 30. Bucks 32, Niners 29.
Yeah, like I kind of want to pick the Bucks, but this way we're split. It's good.
I mean, listen, I'm sure the chat will be going crazy because I picked against the Niners again. I like more of what. How about this? It just comes down to quarterback, and I would rather have Baker Mayfield right now than I would have Mac Jones. Is that crazy? Right? Is that crazy to think that Baker Mayfield's playing at a higher level than Mac Jones right now?
No, I mean he is. Baker's playing at an elite level right now. Even though he's throwing some insane passes and doing wild stuff, he's great.
There is absolutely a universe, and it might show up very early, where Robert Saleh just has this dude's number. Like, I can't shake that idea that the Bucs score like 7.
I guess, yeah. I'm curious. I guess the Niners are, Kevin Givens might come back, might promote Valdez from the practice squad. They like clearly need to make a move at defensive line and maybe add two guys, but I guess
or five.
I mean, I guess it'll just be Michael, it'll be Sam O, Gibson, and Huff will be the ends, and then maybe you bring up like someone named William Bradley King or something. And
they're signing an XFL All-Star team for their practice squad. They got a former Arlington Renegade. I refuse to learn his name.
Love that
he's an XFL champion 2023.
Aren't we all?
Well, in our hearts, for sure. Is this the week that it McCorkle? Doesn't look awesome for McCorkle?
I think he will throw a pick in this game. Yeah,
he can throw a.
I think Antoine Winfield might house one.
1.5 interceptions for McCorkle over under.
I'll take a pick and a fumble.
That wasn't the question. 1.5 interceptions.
I answered it. Under.
You're going under, but two turnovers, 1.5. You're going over. Got it.
Yes.
I'll take the two interceptions.
And I'm taking a Niners win because I think the Bucs will turn it over too.
I love that I have such power. It's incredible. Is that it's picking our rivals? Are the Buccaneers a rival, or are they just a team in the NFC?
Niners have played them like a lot in recent years
because they're a good team. One could make the argument, and I can't remember who made this argument. It might have been Bill. I don't know. I heard this through the grapevine that there was a prominent podcaster who made the argument that the Buccaneers might be the best team of the last like 10 years. Like as a franchise over the last 10 years, they've won a Super Bowl. They've made the playoffs like 7 of the last 10 years, 8 of the last 10 years. They're always in there. So this is the Niners can make the argument that they're that team. The Chiefs obviously should make the argument that they're that team. Like they're in that upper echelon. Yeah. But we
don't feel
view
good about saying yes to that. I really have to.
I don't think you should. I'm just saying.
But
the reason they play so often is because they're both first place teams. And then this year, it's because the schedule gave the Niners the NFC South, which was a gift, or not. We'll see what Atlanta does in a couple weeks. But Eagles, Chiefs. I mean, listen, it was probably a galaxy brain take. That's why I didn't go back and reverse engineer and find out who said
it. I love it.
But the Buccaneers, we'd never put them in that echelon with the Niners. They've won a Super Bowl. They have figured out their quarterback situation, right? Like post Tom Brady, it took the Patriots quite a while to find Drake May. And the jury is still out. He's had one awesome game in primetime. Does it help that their division is doo-doo? Absolutely. They didn't make their division. That's awesome. It's the same argument I make all the time where it's like, oh, well, Brock Purdy had so many great players around him. Oh, what? He's supposed to take out his own players as to make his life harder so that he can show how much better he is? Like, come on now. NFC South sucks, but they can suck too. Sucking is on the table for them. They've been very good. I think they're a well-coordinated team. You know Todd Bowles is really good at it. Their new offensive coordinator is impressive, and his name eludes me. It's not Liam Cohen, but he's doing a good job. Jake, do you know who the offensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is?
I forgot to write that down in my notes. So sorry, Jesus, I got distracted Christ, by you saying sucking is on the table. So
sucking is on the table, not in the Kurtenbach household, but in other places.
All right. Think it's time to wrap.
No, it isn't. We got to go through questions.
Oh, we got a good question.
Okay, here we
Someone,
go.
All right, you got to answer this one because you've been asked. This guy, Label Up, I appreciate you. He's asked it like 3 times.
This man wants Caden Green content. I'm happy to provide. First off, we're all hoping in Missouri Tigerland that Caden Green can play this week against Alabama. Hope you all know what you're doing at 9 a.m. Pacific on Saturday, because I know what I'll be doing, and that's watching Mizzou and Alabama and yelling at my television as my children and wife leave because they can't be around that. It's going to be toxic. It's going to be fun. I'm going to have a great time. Caden Green, what the hell just dropped?
Apologies.
It's okay.
I just have a little spring.
Listen, Caden Green was supposed to be a starting guard for Mizzou, and was a preseason All-American at guard. Late in camp, they just moved him to left tackle. It hasn't been awesome at left tackle, but you can see the potential there. Now, he's been injured the last 2 weeks. I'll say this. I think Caden Green would be doing himself a great disservice coming out in the draft anytime soon. Now, I don't believe he's draft eligible until next year. Could be wrong about that. Forgive me with all the transfer rules and stuff. I don't remember if he took a redshirt year or not at Oklahoma. But he's not ready yet. When he is ready, he has the physical traits and the temperament. When he looks ready, that means first round pick. That's what that means. He is a more physically talented player than Armand Membu. He is a less coordinated version of what we saw from Membu last year. By the way, Membu, like one of the very few bright spots for the Jets. He has been everything they wanted and then a little bit more. So Caden Green, still a project, playing out of position. We'll talk about him in the spring. I don't think that he's somebody that we need to talk about right now as a possibility if we're talking future and all that nonsense. Let's get to the next one here. Will 81. No, it's never
they will drop an interception that Emeka Egbuka will catch. It will go quite literally through somebody's hands, and Egbuka will catch it.
Who drops the interception this week?
Pinnick?
Good one. I'm going Winters. I think Baker throws one right into Winters' face.
And he goes,
he just didn't see him on the hook.
Justin asked, do you think Tonda should still have a role when Kittle returns? He's been great in the past game. I think they should go to their three tight end sets and, you know, keep
a little 13 for you.
Yes. They should use a few of those to dictate the run game. And then you have two actual receiving capable tight ends. I don't think you should use it a bunch, but I think you should experiment with it. And I do think Tonda has earned some role. Unfortunately, he can't really block all that well, but
and no
he does
one
try.
Him to. He's a good blocker out of the backfield. When he gets ahead of steam on him, he's got
him
a little
cut block, and he'll do it.
Yeah, I think he can do pretty well on like a split zone trap.
Slice, a little slice block going across.
A little fullback lead. I think that Tonda should have a role. I think that they're open to that idea. They would play Dwelly, and just think Ross Dwelly, but maybe even like a little bit better.
It's disrespectful to Tonda at this point. He's better than Dwelly.
That's what I'm saying. He's a little bit better. So, like, but they would put Dwelly and Kittle on the field together. I will say we've had a lot of predictions go haywire so far this season. I'm not going to put all of it on the fact that it's injuries. Some of the predictions were just straight up wrong. We've had a ton of them to be right. Just want to note that. The Niners are literally doubling their use of 12 personnel this year. Literally doubling.
Yep.
Nailed it. On the head.
Other prediction. I said Egbuka would win Rookie of the Year. Cognizance. I knew Egbuka was going to be the best wide receiver from this class. I think that was we were doing like hot takes, and I think during the draft process, like I think Egbuka is just probably going to be the best one. He's just the safest, and I think some of the slot limited stuff was concern. McMillan's been solid, but then you know has some limitations.
They're just banged up over there, and I talked about this with Larry on Monday. You know, it goes, oh, well, he's the second best receiver on his own team. Well, that doesn't mean he's not the second best receiver in the country.
So really, come on. The idea that being like a number two wide receiver when like the number one.
He didn't know who Jeremiah Smith was.
Right.
And it's the same thing with Jackson Smith and Jigba, who went for like 390 yards in a Rose
Bowl.
Ohio
State is just so elite at producing wide receiver.
They're very, very good at finding those guys. Quarterbacks, not so much, but when you get one that's halfway competent, you can see what they can do. Jeremiah Smith, by the way, on pace for 2,000 yards this year at Ohio State. He's the best wide receiver prospect. I'm going to say this flat out right now. He's not draft eligible until 27. He should be the number one overall pick in 27. Full stop. I don't care what quarterbacks.
It's after next season.
After next season, because he's a true sophomore.
It's kind of unfortunate because you worry about like injuries and being in college that long. But
let me put it to you this way. If you are at any point on the clock in the 27 draft and Jeremiah Smith is there, you don't think about it. You just take him.
100%.
And if that means you're at 4 because three teams have talked themselves out of Jeremiah Smith, you look up in the sky and you thank whatever deities and or 100%. All of them you want, because those teams are idiots. He is the best wide receiver prospect since Randy Moss, who fell to 19th, by the way. Okay, what do we got next here?
I don't know, David, when Watkins or Callahan are coming back.
How can they come back? They've never been here.
Yeah, I don't know if Callahan will come back at all. By the time he's ready to come back, the receiver situation should be a lot better. Who knows?
They might talk themselves out of Sky Moore. Just try cowing for a week or two.
That's true. I kind of forget about the return capabilities.
It's a tough scene. By the way, okay.
Yeah, so maybe. Maybe sure Cowan will come back in a month or something.
I'm not sure if I should tell this.
You're clearly going to, though.
I saw Isaac Arendo spend like 5 minutes straight working on his headband in the mirror. And I got the ick. I got the ick.
Very boomer from you.
But it was very boomer, but it's like, dude, you know that's going under a helmet, right? Like,
yeah, but then if it slips, you know?
I can appreciate you want to have your equipment in the right spot, but I'm like, I don't feel like that is your number. You should be your number one priority right now.
Yeah.
It just gave me the ick. It's like Kuminga going to number one.
Well, what's
it's
he going to do? He's in the locker room. Lame take. Cognizance. Again, John Lynch apparently has indicated that good trade talks are taking place. Thoughts on for whom? Anyone that costs a seventh round picks?
You can have good trade talks about seventh round picks.
Any team, basically what I'm trying to do in all my fantasy football leagues, which is trade late round picks for theoretically viable players.
That is a way to do it. What's John Lynch going to go on KMBR and say? Like, oh, damn, I should have thought of that. What do you mean, trades? We're allowed to do that? Damn, I should be looking into that. No, he's going to say the same thing that Kyle has said that everyone says. Like, yeah, you know, we're always looking. We're always talking. That doesn't mean Trey Hendrickson is coming. It doesn't mean that Jeffrey Simmons is coming. By the way, I want some damn credit for the Jeffrey Simmons take.
Oh, yeah, everyone's caught up.
Y'all suck. It's not like some galaxy brain thing to think that one of the great defenders in the NFL should be a trade piece because he's on a bad team. But like, no one else was throwing Jeffrey Simmons out there. I got laughed at. I got laughed at when I threw Jeffrey Simmons out there 3 weeks ago. You're all talking Jeffrey Simmons, huh?
He's like a rare guy where I'd be like, first round pick, easily, very comfortable.
Without a question.
But it would.
I mean, the Niners wouldn't be. Yeah. The Niners wouldn't be, but I would. Because what are you going to do? Draft a Jeffrey Simmons?
No,
no, you're not going to draft the Jeffrey.
I don't even care how old he is. He's insane.
He's unbelievable. Okay.
He's like the best defensive lineman in football right now.
Right now. Yeah. And he's consistently been one of the two or three best.
He's 28. Go for him.
I would go for it. Will Bourne have more drops or pre-snap penalties this week? I'm betting drops because the timeouts, we burn timeouts to save the penalty. Yeah, I think drops is a pretty strong favorite there. I think you'd have to.
Yeah.
I'd juice down, though, the pre-snap penalties because he's good for one. He's good for one every game. He's good for like two drops, right?
This is, by the way, Dan the Man has been very upset at any criticism of Kendrick Bourne, which is to say, hey, played really well in the second half, but like the amount of times he's not lined up properly and has dropped the ball is.
I would like to say give him a break, but isn't the whole reason they got Kendrick Bourne because they knew him and felt like he would more easily assimilate to what they did, which is always kind of ridiculous because it's a different offense than they were running in 2020. But like, if Kyle doesn't ever want to go outside of guys that he's already known or scouted heavily because they were good scheme fits.
Right.
And you're just going to bring back Kendrick Bourne's or get a Marquez Valdez-Scantling because he played for the Seahawks and was in the system. Like, maybe, I don't know, expand, because it doesn't seem like that's doing anyone any good.
I mean, it's clearly helping the Niners. I mean, he's clearly doing a great job, and he's also doing a terrible job. He's doing both simultaneously, and it worked out way better. And I would imagine that it gets better as it goes, because he'll get more and more used to the system. So,
I guess. Maybe not. I mean, one of the other issues that I think we forget with Bourne is that he had this kind of dumb stuff happening 3 years into his NFL career. It's why they didn't keep him around. Because they're like, we can't trust him because he does dumb stuff. He's a little bit of an airhead. Just, it is what it is.
What if? Yeah, yeah.
Huh. What were you going
to
say?
I was just thinking about trading Nick Martin with a second round pick to go get Jeffrey Simmons.
Well, he's a future Hall of Famer, so I know. That would be a terrible trade for the 49ers.
Sorry.
It's great. It's a great thing that they drafted Nick Martin. I mean, heaven forbid you use that top.
God forbid you get Jacob Parrish at pick 75 and then take Martin at 100.
Yeah. Just, you know, well, then you wouldn't have Upton Stout, who got benched.
He hurt his ankle
early in the game.
But also Chase Lucas did play. I mean, Chase Lucas got a penalty, but also.
I bet we see plenty of Chase Lucas in this game.
I'll be interested to see how they play it. Lastly, Alberto, Monday night versus Panthers. That may be one for peak suckiness.
I will say this. We were making our Thanksgiving and Christmas plans, me and my wife, and I was just kind of going through the Niners schedule and trying to figure out, okay, well, like, when do I need to be back? Like, what, you know, how do I tell my boss I'm not going to be there for this game or whatever? Like, which ones am I watching on TV? And I mentioned, because it's right around Thanksgiving, Monday night versus the Panthers. So I'll be doing that game off of TV from Washington. And then, but we're good coming back because they're playing the Browns in Cleveland. And I was never going to travel to Cleveland for that game. And she goes, they're going on the road after a Monday night. And we both simultaneously said, oh no, they're going to lose to the Browns, aren't they?
I called that one out pretty early.
Let the record show that Jake and Heather are on the same page and Dieter is lagging behind their football knowledge.
That's right. That's right, folks.
10 a.m. CBS week 13. Don't watch. You don't want to see what happens. Jim Schwartz defense versus the 49ers.
No.
Dylan Gabriel out here carving them up. Well, that part won't happen. But, you know, 6-0 is a viable score to win a football game.
Yeah, that's going to be ugly. That's going to be ugly. They did not play the Browns well.
Enjoy your holiday because the bookends of it will not be very fun. That's my guess right now.
I agree.
Then they get the bye. We'll see what kind of vibes are happening there.
We'll see.
Quickly running through the schedule here. You'll be in India. I'll have to find another football friend because that one went so well the first time. Tampa at home Sunday Night Football next week against the Falcons. Then on the road against Houston. I don't know if they're going to stay over on the East Coast. Kind of hope they do. One less trip to Santa Clara for me. But then they play the Giants at ACL tearing Memorial Stadium. That sponge that they play on.
Yep.
So you thought the injury problems were bad before. November 2nd, week 9 at the New York Giants. Rams, Cardinals, Panthers, Browns. Bye. My goodness, this team is 4-1. They only have to win 6 of their next 12 games to make the playoffs.
Kind of a challenge.
Going to be a challenge. Another, if they win this one, they're in. If they win this one, because there have been two teams since the NFL expanded that have started 4-1 and haven't made the playoffs. 2020 Bears, 2021 Chargers. Might have been off by a year there, but only two teams that haven't made the playoffs from that. I don't think this Niners team is going to be the third. And if they win this one, I can't imagine a world in which a team that I predicted would not make the playoffs won't make the playoffs.
Yeah,
so.
I'm with you. All right, folks.
That's enough.
That'll do it. We'll see you folks on Sunday. Go subscribe to the Hutch Report. Go get your grades. Because remember, the 49ers offensive line is not great at blocking. The D-line, though, plenty of reason for optimism. All right, folks.
Jake's buzzy. Jake's buzzy about the D-line. Talk to you later.